Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This article is entitled Land of Enchantment is Cure for COVID Blues by Philip Brian Tabos, Bloomberg. In December 2015, my partner and I found ourselves on a plane heading to the American Southwest to visit her family in the rural country outside Santa Fe, New Mexico, some 800 miles from the nearest coast. Nothing but sea breeze could ever feel like home, I thought as we journeyed to the driest place I'd ever been. A lifelong East Coaster and the son of Portuguese immigrants, the sea was my definition of solace. But after arriving more than 7,000 feet above sea level, the drama of the high desert hit me with the force of a Broncos buck. It took one sunset, the sky colored with the pink and purple shades of an O'Keeffe painting, for me to understand why they call it the Land of Enchantment. And now, nearly 5 months into New York's COVID-19 lockdown, the fantasy of planting roots around our own adobe home on a dusty plot of land is what continues to beckon my soul. Hightailing it to the middle of nowhere might sound like a strange balm for months-long isolation. But we did end up trading our 850-square-foot existence and 8.6 million neighbors for four wheels, a 75-mile-per-hour speed limit sign, and cell service that flickered away with all our worries. The only catch? During our self-imposed quarantine, New Mexico surged past 17,500 reported infections, stalling its reopening plans and keeping locals indoors. So even though we're physically here, we're spending our time socially distanced, daydreaming about the moment when we could take in all the state's charms, from its native art galleries and trailblazing restaurants to its monuments, and of course, its many natural wonders. Here's what we've done so far, hint, not much, and what we're hoping to do once it's safe. After crisscrossing the country, our first stop in New Mexico was the rural artist's hamlet of Galisteo, 23 miles south of Santa Fe. This small community has housed no shortage of high-profile residents, including artists Agnes Martin, Susan Rothenberg, and Bruce Nauman. It's also where designer Tom Ford had prized architect Tadeo Ando build for him the 20,662-acre Cerro Pelon Ranch, which is about 25% larger than Manhattan and is on the market for a cool $48 million. Rather than request a tour from the listing agent, though, we visited another local, my partner's mother, an artist in her own right. We sat against her home's adobe walls, masked and beyond hugging distance, before unpacking our bags in her property's separated casita. From outside the windows, we admired the still wet prints in her studio. Then we escaped the heat underneath a gnarled cottonwood tree and began to dream of what a life might look like here post-pandemic. The first natural step, we've decided, would be to pack a pair of mountain bikes and head to the cream-colored grasslands of the Galisteo Basin Preserve. With its more than 28 miles of marked cycling, hiking, and equine trails spread across more than 9,000 miles. Recovery, not just from the spirited trail ride, but from months of hunching over my laptop in a crudely made home office, will come courtesy of 10,000 Waves, a Japanese-inspired spa in the foothills of the Sangre de Cristo Range. First on deck, a 50-minute shiatsu massage. But we'll stay in our complimentary kimonos through dinner, which is more than acceptable at the property's izakaya-style restaurant, Izanami. On high seats at the chef's table, we'll order the five-course omakase with hot stone wagyu and sip on a flight of rare, unpasteurized namazakis. Izanami claims one of the most impressively curated collections of sakes this side of the Pacific. Being New Yorkers with a love for Western flair, we can't help but indulge in a little style hunting while back in town. Our first choice visit would be the Thrifter's Wonderland of Santa Fe Vintage. Along a nondescript back road in an unmarked motel-like structure, this appointment-only warehouse holds the treasures of pure Americana. Floor-to-ceiling stacks of denim, dozens of hand-woven rugs, and enough cowboy hats and boots for all the Old West gunfighters. More central is Café Pascual's a 41-year-old, 12-table restaurant draped in the rainbow strings of papel picado and dried chili wrist dress. A reference to the dish that made chef Catherine Cagle an early James Beard Foundation award winner. Her signature dish, Blue Lady Enchiladas, comes out blanketed in cheddar jack cheese and red and green chili sauce. Christmas, the locals call it. For dessert, there's a fluffy wisp of house-made lemon meringue tart that'll make you question just how much exercise you haven't done since the lockdown. If we leave Café Pascual's feeling like we should probably increase our cardio, we'll aim our gaze 2 hours north to the Taos Ski Valley, where you can get world-class slopes or hiking trails in the summertime, all to yourself. The Mabel Dodge Lujan House, a National Historic Landmark more than a century old, is a great place to rest your head just 20 miles shy of the mountain resort. It's named for a New York expat, like us, who became famous as a socialite and arts patron, hosting salons for some of the greatest American artists of the 20th century. Its 19 rooms are named for famous guests, Ansel Adams, Edward Weston, D.H. Lawrence, and outfitted with traditional Kiva fireplaces. One, the solarium, is in the owner's former sun porch. It's a veritable glass box overlooking the mesa. To this day, Lujan's legacy lives on in Taos. The town hosts more than 60 galleries and museums, but we'll head instead to the base of Wheeler Peak, the highest point in New Mexico, accessible via a strenuous 8.2-mile out-and-back hiking trail that cuts through the spruce and subalpine fir trees. A few hours in, at around 11,000 feet, we'd unpack lunch along the frigid waters of the Alpine Lake before doubling back to hit the 13,160-foot summit. The last patches of winter snow will remind us just how far above the oceans and away from our old lives we have come. From Wheeler Peak, you could see practically the entire state of New Mexico. It's a vantage that makes it simultaneously simple and difficult to see why we are drawn to this land. Living surrounded by a dramatic landscape means dealing with elements and all their implicit challenges. But it's also inspired centuries of culture and creativity. For that, I'd gladly give up the ocean. Native communities across the country are at increased risk during the pandemic, a result of high poverty rates, frequently overcrowded living situations, and poor access to safe drinking water and fresh food. Please consider a donation to the First Nations COVID-19 Emergency Response Fund, which is helping to mitigate many of those concerns. This is the region and state page. This article is entitled Midland County Sheriff's Office, Man Charged in Aggravated Assault, from staff reports. A 41-year-old Cedar Park man is being held in a Kerr County jail on charges of aggravated robbery, aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, and injury to a child in connection with an incident that occurred at a local convenience store Friday afternoon, according to a press release from the Midland County Sheriff's Office. A man, later identified as Jerry L. Gardner, assaulted a woman and her child at a gas pump at Uncle's Convenience Store, 4921 East Loop 250 North, according to the release. A witness who attempted to stop the assault was also assaulted. Gardner then drove off in the woman's vehicle, according to the release. He was located in Kerr County later on Friday and was arrested after a pursuit, according to the release. Midland County deputies responded at about 2:30 p.m. Friday. No other information is available.
Health and wellness. Heart valve procedure allows for quicker recovery. Dr. Mark Davis, Midland Health. Heart disease can be scary, but understanding the disease and treatments can help you get back to life. Midland Memorial Hospital offers many advanced treatment options. One of these treatment options is for those with heart valve disease. How would you know if you have heart valve disease? Common symptoms are shortness of breath, chest pain or pressure, and dizziness or fainting episodes with exertions. The average patient is older than 70. If you are of any age and experiencing these symptoms, please seek medical care. When people get older, often the aortic valve of the heart calcifies and has difficulty opening. This is called aortic stenosis. When this valve has difficulty opening, blood backs up into the heart and the lungs and causes people to have chest pain, shortness of breath, dizziness, and fatigue. Many years ago, the only treatment was an aortic valve replacement by open heart surgery. but over the past 5 to 10 years, we have developed techniques to replace the failing valve with a new valve by inserting a tube into the artery in the groin. Through this tube, we stick wires into the heart in order to put a new valve inside the failing valve. By doing so, the patient's symptoms are resolved. Instead of taking weeks to recover, patients are up and moving and leaving the hospital the next day. This procedure is called TAVR, transcatheter aortic valve replacement. The TAVR procedure is now performed in the Permian Basin by myself in Midland and Dr. Adam Farber in Odessa. We are interventional cardiologists and are assisted by Dr. Kirit Patel, our cardiovascular surgeon. Together, we are helping patients with aortic valve stenosis live longer and more fulfilling lives. Dr. Mark Davis is with Permian Cardiology. Celebrate legacy of community health centers. Jana Eubank, Texas Association of Community Health Centers. This week is a celebration of the work and impact of the country's community health centers. Yet, amid the celebrations of these more than 50-year-old institutions and their vital role in our nation's health care system, lurks a threat to their future. Unless Congress acts before November to extend the Community Health Center Fund, which provides more than $180 million annually to Texas's CHCs, hundreds of thousands of Texans will lose access to essential health care. Initially, a demonstration project under President Lyndon Johnson's War on Poverty, community health centers, or federally qualified health centers, have evolved into sophisticated providers of primary chronic mental health, substance use, dental, vision, and pharmacy care, as well as programs and services that promote health and well-being. They provide care to all who need it, regardless of ability to pay, and serve as medical homes for the most vulnerable and underserved. Today, there are more than 1,400 FQHCs across the country, including 73 in Texas, that care for 1.5 million people each year. In the health community, we often talk about access to care and assess policies according to whether they will enhance or inhibit the availability and affordability of health care, particularly for those with lower incomes, the elderly, those with disabilities, veterans, homeless individuals, or those without health insurance. For FQHCs, increasing access to care means making it physically, financially, linguistically, and culturally accessible. Texas's 73 CHCs operate more than 570 care sites in frontier, rural, and urban neighborhoods where need is greatest and medical care is most lacking. For those without health insurance or the financial means to pay for care, CHCs use a sliding fee scale so that income is not a deterrent to getting essential care. To eliminate linguistic, environmental, and other barriers to care, CHCs provide enabling services, which, while not direct care services themselves, are essential to making health care attainable and to achieving good health. These enabling services include transportation, interpretation, health education, environmental health risk reduction, and assistance with enrolling in insurance coverage. The CHC care model is effective at both generating cost savings and improving care outcomes. Annually, they generate $24 billion in savings for the healthcare system by providing timely, affordable, and accessible primary care, chronic care management, and prenatal care. CHCs reduce avoidable and costly hospital emergency department visits, admissions and readmissions, and reduce the risk of low birth weight deliveries, and improve maternal and newborn outcomes. And CHCs have been and will continue to be indispensable amid COVID-19. They have tested more than 160,000 people, relieving the burden on local public health departments and hospital emergency departments. They have also kept their doors open, often virtually through telehealth, so no Texan loses access to essential health care. Continuing this work depends on stable and reliable federal funding. While health centers rely on numerous funding sources, including third-party reimbursement, the CHCF is foundational to their ability to provide care. This week, we celebrate CHC's legacy. We ask Congress to join us by passing a long-term funding bill to secure the Community Health Center Fund so that legacy can continue. Jana Eubank is Executive Director of Texas Association of Community Health Centers. Happiness is everything. Lingering baby blues may be a red flag for depression. Samantha Allen, Samaritan Counseling Center. Need help? For assistance, call Samaritan Counseling Center at 563-4144. Having a baby is a life-changing experience. While you may want to feel happy and soak in the newborn stage, this does not always happen. About 80% of women may go through baby blues, which is caused by sudden change in hormones after giving birth. New moms may feel overwhelmed, irritable, fatigued, emotional, or even lonely. These feelings are usually resolved in a couple of weeks. However, feelings of depression and anxiety may linger, and this could be a red flag for postpartum depression or anxiety. About 10 to 15% of women experience symptoms such as feeling like you cannot handle being a mom or feeling like you should be adjusting better, having trouble bonding with your baby, changes in appetite, having trouble sleeping when the baby sleeps, excessive crying or feeling very irritable or angry, resentment toward your baby, partner, or friends who do not have babies, excessive worry even after people try to reassure you, feeling like you cannot relax or that you must always be doing something, cleaning the house, making bottles, checking on the baby, etc. Disturbing thoughts that will not go away, feeling like something terrible is going to happen, being afraid that you have lost the old you, and thoughts about harming yourself or the baby. Certain risk factors that may make women more prone to postpartum depression or anxiety include being a first-time mom, lack of support, traumatic pregnancy or labor, history of depressive or anxiety episodes, and feeling insecure about physical changes due to pregnancy. Anxiety and depression are often tied together, so you may experience some, all, or even different symptoms than the ones listed above. It is important to remember that you are not alone, and there is help available. Give yourself grace as you learn to adjust to your baby and learn a new set of skills. You are a great mom, and you can overcome this. Photo caption. Tawana Morissette plays with her 2-year-old twins, Josiah Left and Jariah, at their apartment in Katy on August 5, 2019. Morissette relied on Peanut, an app that enables mothers and mothers-to-be to meet, chat, and learn from one another for support around having preemies and postpartum depression.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Monday, August 10th, 2020. This column is entitled Guest View. Federal Aviation Administration should require masks, penalize those who don't comply. From Bloomberg. In a country where COVID-19 remains out of control, it's wrong for anyone not to wear a mask on a commercial airplane. Increasing evidence shows that good cloth face coverings significantly lower the spread of the novel coronavirus at close quarters, and that not wearing them is risky because this germ is so often breathed into the air by people who don't yet know they have it. One passenger on a flight from Singapore to Hangzhou, China, was infected by neighboring passengers when he merely let his mask slip below his nose while talking to his family. It is one thing for people to take chances with their own health. It's quite another when their reckless behavior also puts others at risk. The evidence clearly shows that this is a case with masks during the pandemic. In fact, people who choose to risk their own health this way are exposing others to potentially worse danger. Smoking is banned almost everywhere, including on airplanes. During the pandemic, all air passengers should be required to wear masks and face legal penalties if they don't. Most Americans have come to understand the need to mask up. 72% usually do, but 18% rarely or never do, and some of these objectors apparently want to remain maskless on airlines. This imperils the health of innocent strangers, including flight crew members for whom the cabin is a workplace. Airplane ventilation systems remove almost all germs from the air, but it takes a few minutes for exhaled virus particles to reach the filters. Major airlines already require passengers and crew members to wear masks, but their rules come with exceptions. One airline excuses children under age 8, for instance. And most important, aren't always enforced. In a couple of instances, airlines have refused entry to unmasked passengers or removed someone from a plane after boarding. But as things stand, there's not much they can do to keep irresponsible passengers from removing their masks during flight. An FAA rule could set penalties for non-compliance, just as some governments do. Many cities where the coronavirus is uncontained are levying $100 fines for going without a mask near other people in public places. Research has shown that such mandates work. Enforceable mandates increase the number of mask wearers and reduce new infections. If 95% of Americans were to wear masks, more than 30,000 lives could be saved over the next few months, according to the University of Washington's Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation. When masks do not prevent transmission altogether, they make infections less severe, and they do so without appreciably limiting people's intake of oxygen. Air travel is still a fraction of what it was before the pandemic. For airlines, as for the U.S. at large, it will be impossible to return to normal unless COVID-19 is contained. Masks are one of the most effective strategies. Democrats in the House have introduced legislation that would authorize the Federal Aviation Administration to require masks on all U.S. flights and impose criminal penalties for failure to comply. It should be passed without delay. This is the opinion page. This column is entitled COVID-19 Won't Disappear. Schools Must Reopen by Kathleen Parker, Washington Post Writers Group. In one ear, the trembling voice of a teacher says she's terrified to return to the classroom. In the other, an exhausted mother of two children tells me she's praying for her kids can go back to school. In the New York Times, teacher Rebecca Martinson writes that she won't risk her life to teach other people's kids. In The Atlantic, nurse Kristen McConnell, who is married to a teacher, argues that teachers are essential workers just like she is, and they should step up to the plate. These are all real people who are doing their best to cope with the deeply altered world in which we now live. Each has a legitimate perspective that's probably shared by millions of others. To be honest, I'd be afraid to teach in today's classroom, though I felt that way before the virus. I'd also be deeply reluctant to send my own children into the petri dish of any school right now. Parents quickly learn that children bring home whatever they catch at school. And though the very young typically become less ill than adults with this coronavirus, they're still messy little love bugs whose hugs and kisses aren't easily denied. Teachers also didn't sign up for the health risks in the way medical people have. But then, neither did grocery store clerks, warehouse workers, or bus drivers. Still, should teachers be expected to join the front lines in this particular war? Admittedly, at no personal risk, I'm inclined to say, you bet. Children need to be in school. Parents need to return to work. The world needs to keep turning. Although infection rates are still surging in some places, they're declining in others. The ever-cautious Anthony Fauci said Thursday that children should return to school, but that policies should reflect local circumstances. What works in Vermont, which has a testing positivity rate of 0.6%, seems unwise in Mississippi, where the rates are 20.9%. Plans that combine classroom attendance with homeschooling may be workable in some places and not in others. On Friday, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo cleared the way for schools to reopen because of the state's 1% infection rate. What's clear is that normal isn't coming back. With or without a vaccine, COVID-19 is here to stay, probably indefinitely, according to a growing consensus of scientists. Management of this virus is the destination now. As doctors improve treatments and people embrace best practices, wearing a mask and avoiding close encounters, we're likely to see fewer cases of less severity. And a vaccine, once approved, will begin to make COVID-19 less widespread or horrifying, but it won't make it go away entirely. That's the new reality. Exceptions to this somewhat brighter scenario will continue to include people with pre-existing conditions and the elderly, who are more vulnerable to grave illness and or death. This is sad and hard for those affected, but perfection is never an option. The truth is, we've reached a point where everyone needs to be an essential worker for the sake of the economy, for everyone's psychological well-being, for peace, for unity and sanity. We all need to refuel, and while remaining vigilant, thoughtful, and careful. This isn't a political statement, even if Republicans are pushing school and Democrats, reacting to teacher unions, are leaning the other way. Just an obvious and neutral observation. Alas, politics drives, both drives and undermines the discussion we should be having about what all Americans can do to play their part. It isn't enough that some people wear a mask most of the time if others never cover their mouth and nose or continue to gather as if nothing has changed. Everything has changed. We must adapt. One other plea. If ever there were a time to think beyond oneself, it's now. I feel like dusting off my pom-poms and shouting, "We can do this!" But I really wish someone else would do it, like the president, or maybe that guy running against him. Please. He could speak in the spirit of longed-for bipartisanship about how there's nothing we can't do, including doing two things at once. Managing the virus and safely rebuilding the economy by sending younger, healthy, and COVID-recovered Americans back to work. Encouraging the elderly and compromised to stay home, and getting children back to school as Fauci prescribed. Come on, Joe. You can do this.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, August 11th, 2020. Counsel to Purchase OFR Equipment by Michael Merlo, MMERLO at OAOA.com. The Odessa City Council will consider multiple Odessa Fire Rescue purchases of equipment to combat COVID-19 during Tuesday night's council meeting. The City Council agenda detailed that Council will consider the purchase of OFR uniforms with CARES CRF funds, which would allow employees to receive two extra t-shirts and two extra pairs of pants. With the higher volume of COVID related calls coming in, suppression personnel will be able to remain in a clean uniform for the duration of the shift, the agenda states. The total purchase price is estimated at $43,902.32. Council will also consider the purchase of GlideScope Pros, which will prevent OFR personnel from having direct contact with patients while performing endotracheal tube placement with CARES CRF funds for OFR. The price is estimated at $61,948. Council will also consider the purchase of one ZOLL cardiac monitor / defibrillator with CARES CRF funds that Assistant Chief EMS Rod Huber said during last week's City Council meeting will help with cardiac monitoring, our treatment of our COVID patients, all of our patients with any cardiac arrest, chest pains, he said, adding that the monitor is also compatible with Medical Center Hospital. Huber also spoke on the considered purchase of 9 automatic CPR devices with CARES CRF funds, saying that the machines allow them to have some social distancing with that cardiac arrest patient, which takes one more person out of that line of contamination. We don't know when all of these patients are suspicious. Sometimes we don't know that they're positive COVID patients until we've transported them to the ER and we get that positive confirmation back. While the cardiac monitor is listed at $38,327, the CPR devices are listed at $170,777. The city will also consider consent agenda. Consider calling the 2020 general municipal election for November 3rd, 2020. Ordinance, second and final approval. Consider amending Article 3 through 12, flood damage prevention in the City Code of Ordinances. Ordinance, second and final approval. Consider the approval of the 2020-2021 budget of $900,996 for the Emergency Communication District of Ector County, resolution. Consider approval on authorization to use electronic signature on TxDOT traffic safety grants, resolution. Consider authorizing the City of Odessa Police Department to apply for and accept amending the fiscal budget to appropriate awarded funds as additional revenue and authorizing the expenditure of awarded grant funds from the 2020 BJA Edward Byrne Memorial Justice Assistance Grant Program, JAG, for $65,370. Resolution. Consider an interlocal agreement with Ector County for the division of the 2020 Edward Byrne Memorial Justice Assistance Grant, JAG, funds. Resolution. Consider a resolution appointing the Capital Improvements Advisory Committee, and adopting the committee's procedural rules. Resolution. Consider the award of contract with Civic Plus for website development and mass notification system for $345,954. Consider bid award to Neil Poole for impound services. Other council action. Consider the Ector County Elections Administrator contract for the general municipal election, November 3rd, 2020. Resolution. Consider the approval of the City of Odessa's 2020 Action Plan and the 2020 through 2024 Consolidated Plan. Consider approval of the City of Odessa's amendment to the 2019 Action Plan. Appointment of boards. Citizen comments on non-agenda items. Adjourn. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, August 11th, 2020. Opinion. National View. School opening extortion. The Point. Teachers' unions are using COVID-19 as a political weapon. For most Americans, the coronavirus is a scourge, but teachers' unions seem to think it's also an opportunity to squeeze more money from taxpayers and put their private and public charter school competition out of business. That's the only way to read the extraordinary effort by national and local union leaders to keep their members from returning to the classroom. Last week, Randy Weingarten, leader of the powerful American Federation of Teachers, declared support for safety strikes if local unions deem insufficient the steps their school districts are taking to mitigate COVID-19. And on Monday, an alliance of teachers' unions and progressive groups sponsored what they called a National Day of Resistance around the country, listing their demands before returning to the classroom. They include support for our communities and families, including canceling rents and mortgages, a moratorium on evictions/foreclosures, providing direct cash assistance to those not able to work or who are unemployed, and other critical social needs. Moratorium on new charter or voucher programs and standardized testing. Massive infusion of federal money to support the reopening funded by taxing billionaires and Wall Street. The phrase for this is political extortion. Rather than work to open schools safely, the unions are issuing ultimatums and threatening strikes until they are granted their ideological wish list. Children who would have to endure more lost instruction are their hostages. The teachers' unions have a cynical interest in forcing their competitors to shut down. What a humiliation it would be if charter and private schools reopen and demonstrate that in-person education can be done with the right risk mitigation. Or if parents, unsatisfied with the public school's response to the coronavirus, decide a private school would be better for their child. If there's a silver lining here, it's that Americans are getting a closer look at the true, self-interested character of today's teachers' unions. They are allies of the political left, and they wield monopoly power that they are now using to coerce parents and taxpayers to dance to their agenda if they want their children to learn. The proper political response should be to give taxpayer dollars to parents to decide where and how to educate their children. If parents want to use the money for private schools that are open or for new forms of home instruction, they should have that right. No political force should have veto power over the education of America's children. The Wall Street Journal. Biden's modest health care plans. Healthcare policy has been a major issue for a long time. It played a big role in Barack Obama's 2008 election victory, his entire presidency, and the 2010 GOP takeover of the House of Representatives. Repealing Obamacare was a Republican priority before and after Donald Trump became president. The debate on Medicare for All dominated the 2020 Democratic primaries. Now, in the middle of the nation's worst pandemic in 100 years, you would think healthcare policy would be the object of obsession among politicians and voters. Instead, the issue has gone missing. Congress is absorbed with economic stimulus and help for the unemployed. The Trump administration's favorite topic is law and order. Racial justice is paramount among Democrats right now. But the topic may finally get some attention. His aides are touting a speech in which Trump will lay out his health care vision, Politico reported Sunday. White House counselor to the president, Kellyanne Conway, has been calling Trump the health care president. Seriously? In June 2019, he said he would produce phenomenal health care with a plan he would be announcing in 2 months, maybe less. We're still waiting for it. Laying out his health care vision 3.5 years into his presidency would only highlight how little the issue concerned him. It's as if George W. Bush had waited until 2005 to respond to the 9/11 attacks. Not that Trump has any coherent idea of how to address the problems in our healthcare system. His one firm idea was to undo what his predecessor did. By his own standards, he's a failure. Candidate Trump decried the ACA as a total disaster and said in October 2016, "Repealing Obamacare and stopping Hillary's healthcare takeover is one of the single most important reasons that we must win on November 8th. But he couldn't get a Republican-controlled Congress to get rid of the ACA. With some minor changes, it's alive and functioning. Nor has the administration made any serious effort to construct an alternative that would expand coverage, reduce costs, or fill the many holes in our healthcare system, needs that suddenly grew more urgent with the arrival of COVID-19. The United States still has the dubious distinction of being the only major industrialized nation that does not guarantee universal health care. In a pandemic, the gaps in coverage are particularly worrisome because patients who go without treatment or work while ill for fear of losing their insurance make it easier for the virus to spread. Lack of access for one person may mean death for another. Our current system somehow yields both excessive costs and disappointing results. Despite spending far more than 11 other wealthy countries examined in a 2017 report by the Commonwealth Fund, the U.S. ranked last in performance. The consequences are serious. Poor access to primary care has contributed to inadequate prevention and management of chronic diseases, delayed diagnoses, incomplete adherence to treatments, wasteful overuse of drugs and technologies, and coordination and safety problems, the report concluded. None of those failings has abated under the pressure of the pandemic. Joe Biden, fortunately, has not let himself be stampeded into supporting Bernie Sanders' extravagant Medicare for All, a favorite of progressives. This week, Democratic Party's platform committee rejected any single-payer system. They may have heeded the lesson of the ACA experience. Americans dislike the healthcare status quo, but distrust any major change. Incremental reforms are a more practical strategy than an ambitious overhaul. Such changes can also make a difference in people's well-being. In 2008, 14.7% of Americans had no health insurance coverage, but by 2017, the figure was down to 7.9%, thanks in large part to the ACA. Obamacare represented a centrist approach that combined a conservative reliance on private insurance and markets with a liberal emphasis on providing crucial help to low-income Americans. Trump has not offered a serious alternative because he and his party have never come up with one. The most conservative states showed their priorities by refusing to expand Medicaid, not by creating better options. The result is that they have far higher numbers of uninsured people than other states. Between the callous preferences of conservative and the extravagant dreams of progressives lies the practical path to improvement represented by the ACA. Biden's plans, faithful to that approach, may be too dull to attract much attention, but they're not imaginary, they're not scary, and they're not futile. Stephen Chapman. Chapman writes for the Chicago Tribune, as well as being a syndicated columnist. Read Chapman's daily blog, www.chicagotribune.com/news/opinion/Chapman.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Monday, August 10th, 2020. This is the Energy and Nation page. This article is entitled, Drillers Cut Exploration in U.S. Oil Fields to 15-Year Low, by David Weth, Bloomberg. Drillers cut exploration in U.S. oil fields to a 15-year low as billions of barrels from old discoveries became worthless and explorers abandoned growth plans. The number of active oil rigs in the U.S. fell by 4 to 176, the lowest since 2005, according to Baker Hughes Company data released Friday. Energy companies have been parking rigs on an almost interrupted streak for more than 4.5 months. Stung by the pandemic-driven slump in demand and prices, oil explorers are fleeing from the very lifeblood of their business, drilling for new discoveries. ExxonMobil Corporation and Chevron Corporation have warned they probably will wipe billions of barrels of reserves from their books because weak prices have made them unprofitable to pump. Instead of searching for new untapped deposits of crude, oil executives are channeling cash into dividends and other shareholder-friendly initiatives to appease investors fed up with years of poor returns. North American E&Ps are in a battle for investment relevance, not a battle for global market share, Matt Gallagher, chief executive officer at Parsley Energy Inc., told analysts during a conference call. Allocating growth capital into a global market with artificially constrained supply is a trap our oil industry has fallen into time and time again. Permian decline. Most of the weekly rig decline occurred in the Permian Basin, North America's biggest oil field, the data showed. Drilling also dropped in the Eagle Ford Shale in South Texas and stagnated in the Bakken and Denver-Julesburg regions in North Dakota and Colorado, as respectively. Worldwide lockdown to prevent the spread of COVID-19 had a devastating impact on crude demand at a time when shale explorers were already struggling with too much debt and restive shareholders. While benchmark U.S. oil futures have roughly doubled to $40 a barrel since the start of May, prices are still down by more than 30% for the year. The rig count is a closely watched metric because it's long been considered indicative of future crude production. The relationship is imperfect, however, because of the time lag between drilling a well and commencing production, as well as other factors such as turning off existing wells in response to price movements.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, August 8, 2020. Visit MRT.com. Analysis request. Senator Sherrod Brown, D. Ohio, speaks to members of the media outside a briefing at Dirksen Senate Office Building, March 1st, on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C. Brown, the Banking Committee's top Democrat, said Vega Capital London Limited's trading profits indicate that additional regulatory safeguards are needed, according to a letter he sent Thursday to the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. He also questioned comments CFTC Chairman Heath Tarbert has made about what happened on April 20th when the price of oil hit negative $37 a barrel. Senator questions whether oil markets can be manipulated. Democrat Sherrod Brown, Additional regulatory safeguards may be needed after UK firm makes $500 million when price went negative. By Ben Bain, Liam Vaughan, and Kit Shallow, Bloomberg. A key Senate Democrat is urging U.S. regulators to conduct a thorough analysis of whether oil markets are susceptible to manipulation, following a Bloomberg News report that documented how a small London firm made as much as $500 million when the price of crude went negative in April. Senator Sherrod Brown of Ohio, the Banking Committee's top Democrat, said Vega Capital London Limited's trading profits indicate that additional regulatory safeguards are needed, according to a letter he sent Thursday to the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. He also questioned comments CFTC Chairman Heath Tarbert had made about what happened on April 20th, when the price of oil hit negative $37 a barrel. Vega's earnings were driven by about a dozen traders aggressively selling in unison before the May West Texas Intermediate contract settled at 2:30 p.m. in New York. Bloomberg reported Tuesday, citing people familiar with the matter who requested anonymity. The CFTC, the UK's Financial Conduct Authority, and CME Group Incorporated, owner of the NYMEX exchange where the trading took place, are examining whether Vega's actions may have breached regulations on trading around settlement periods, the people said. The agencies and CME are also examining whether the transactions contributed to oil's unprecedented fall into negative territory. Vega hasn't responded to requests for comment. Brown's letter flagged comments Tarbert made during an April 21st interview with CNBC, in which he said oil's plunge appeared to be a fundamental supply and demand issue. The letter also cited a July 15th Financial Times article in which Tarbert said the CFTC hadn't yet been able to assess one way or another whether there was any wrongdoing by market participants on April 20th. In his letter, Brown said Tarbert's comments in the CNBC interview were premature, and the remarks made to the Financial Times indicate the CFTC must continue to examine what triggered the price drop. Brown's letter takes Tarbert's comments on CNBC out of context. Rachel Millard, a CFTC spokeswoman, said in an emailed statement. She said Tarbert indicated in that interview and elsewhere that the agency is looking to understand everything that might have been behind the drop, leaving open the possibility that other technical factors could have played a role in addition to the more obvious fundamental macroeconomic factors. The CFTC is preparing to release a detailed report in the coming months on what happened in oil markets on April 20th.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, August 12th, 2020. This is the oil page. This article is entitled "Oil Dips Lower After Facing Resistance at Key Technical Level" by Andres Guerra-Laws, Bloomberg. Crude closed lower after failing to hold above a key technical level as a still raging pandemic threatens to depress demand in the fall. Futures in New York declined 0.8% on Tuesday as oil met resistance at its 200-day moving average. Meanwhile, coronavirus infections breached 20 million cases globally, and in the U.S., which accounts for a quarter of all cases, Florida reported another day of record deaths. The rising case count indicates a weaker market in the fall after the summer driving season comes to an end. West Texas Intermediate for September delivery settled Tuesday at $41.61 a barrel. Brent for October settlement lost 49 cents to end the session at $44.50. We still continue to have an overhang and a significant amount of spare capacity with OPEC, said Bart Mellick, head of global commodity strategy at TD Securities. It's going to be tough to get out of that trading range. the industry-funded American Petroleum Institute reported that U.S. crude supplies declined by 4.01 million barrels last week, according to people familiar. The Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and its allies will ease their historic output curbs this month in a test for a market already devastated by the pandemic. Still, Rystad's head of shale research said unless prices move back toward $50 a barrel in the next few weeks, a rig activity rebound is unlikely before the first half of 2021. I'd expect some rigs to go back to work now that oil has gotten above $40, but is it enough to unbalance the oil market? Said Peter McNally, global head for industrials, materials, and energy at Third Bridge. I doubt it. The comeback in volumes is not likely to be what it was last time. In physical markets, crude in Texas's Permian Basin this week traded near the strongest level in over 2 weeks. West Texas sour rose as much as 10 cents to 25 cents over 9x. WIT futures, its highest premium in almost a month before easing. The API report also showed declines in distillate and gasoline supplies, but a 1.07 million barrel build in inventories at the Cushing, Oklahoma storage hub. If confirmed by U.S. government data on Wednesday, it will be the sixth straight weekly increase in stockpiles at Cushing. This article is entitled Oxy Reports $8.4 Billion Loss in the Second Quarter by Paul Takahashi, Houston Chronicle. Occidental Petroleum posted a steep loss during the second quarter as the coronavirus pandemic depressed crude demand and prices and battered the energy sector. The Houston Independent on Monday said it lost $8.4 billion, or $9.12 per share, during the quarter, compared with a profit of $635 million, or 84 cents per share, during the same period a year ago. Second quarter revenue fell to about $3 billion, down from about $4.5 billion during the same period a year ago. Oxy, saddled with debt from its $38 billion acquisition of rival Anadarko Petroleum last year, wrote down the value of its oil and gas assets by $6.6 billion to reflect low crude prices during the second quarter. The average price of Oxy's oil fell about 61% to $23.17 per barrel in the second quarter, down from $58.91 per barrel the same period last year. We continue to make progress on our debt structure and have significantly exceeded our cost savings targets while delivering operational excellence across our business, CEO Vicky Haloub said in a statement. Energy has become the worst performing sector of the U.S. stock market after the global pandemic sliced demand and sent prices for petroleum products plummeting, forcing companies to cut spending, halt drilling projects, and lay off thousands of employees. Oxy staked its future on the Anadarko acquisition, which made the company the largest player in the Permian Basin of West Texas, the nation's most productive shale play. The mega deal represented a huge bet on oil prices rising amid the shale boom, which suddenly evaporated as the coronavirus pandemic shut down economies around the world. Oxy responded to the oil bust by laying off workers, slashing its operating expenses by $600 million, and its spending on new wells by $2.5 billion, and cutting its dividend for the first time in 3 decades. The company also is trying to sell its assets to pay back $36 billion of debt, but warned it might not be able to sell its assets quickly enough to repay its debt. French oil major Total in May backed out of its agreement with Oxy to purchase offshore assets in Ghana, citing low oil prices driven by the global pandemic. Oxy has received bids for the company's mineral interests in Wyoming and is reportedly in talks with Indonesia's state oil company Pertamina to sell $4.5 billion in assets in Africa and the Middle East, according to Bloomberg. Oxy spokeswoman Melissa Shoeb declined to comment on the possible Pertamina deal, saying, "We don't comment on rumors or speculation." Oxy said it has $1.2 billion of cash on hand at the end of the second quarter, down from $3.6 billion at the start of the quarter. The company has nearly $12 billion of debt coming due in 2022.
Needs new strategy for heel cracks. To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach, Wednesday, August 12th. Dear Dr. Roach, I am a 76-year-old male in excellent health. The skin on my heels tends to be dry and callous, and at times develops cracks that can become surprisingly painful and take time to heal. I shower and change my socks daily. I've tried applying Vaseline or Aquaphor as a preventative measure with some success, but the cracks still occur. Could there be bacteria or fungi involved that contribute to this problem? Can you recommend a medication that might provide superior value? Answer. Many people experience cracking in the skin of the heel. Dry skin is the most common cause, and proper footwear, regular moisturizing, and avoiding excess washing with harsh soaps and hot water all may help. If the problem continues, it is more likely an inflammatory condition like eczema that is a fungal or bacteria infection. Making the proper diagnosis will help guide treatment, which may include steroid ointments or even glue to repair the cracking. A podiatrist or dermatologist would be a good first stop.
Dear Abby, poolside overexposure gets disapproval of grandparents. Dear Abby, my husband and I are in our 60s and have a swimming pool that our kids and grandkids like to visit. Our issue is that our granddaughter wears a bathing suit that shows her bum. It isn't a thong, but close to it. She's 16 and starting her junior year of high school this year. It makes my husband and me uncomfortable, and we have told my daughter as much. Is this one of those situations where we either accept it or don't allow her to swim with such a suit? I love my granddaughter and will put up with the way it makes us feel if that is where the line is drawn, but it is hard for us to understand. When she brings her friends, they dress the same way. What do you advise? Uncomfortable grandparents. Dear grandparents, because you and your spouse are uncomfortable with the amount of exposure your granddaughter and her friends display when they come to swim, you have the right to tell them to wear something less revealing. It's your pool, and the bottom line is, it's your privilege to set the rules. Be prepared, however, for your granddaughter to not want to use your pool as often in the future. Dear Abby, my father is 87 and has stage 4 cancer. For years, he has lied about being a hospital corpsman in the Navy during the Korean War. My parents live in a retirement community, and he talks about being in the war while wearing a Navy baseball cap. Dad was in the Naval Reserve, that we know of, but never saw combat. Veterans groups are always bringing him quilts, food, etc. My mom is horrified and doesn't know what to say when he goes on a rant about having been hit by shrapnel while pulling a fellow naval guy out of a burning building. He will pass away soon, and the veterans groups will be giving Mom a flag he doesn't deserve. Mom doesn't know what to do. Should we just ignore the antics or say something? Please help. Uncertain in Florida. Dear Uncertain, what your father has been doing is called stolen valor or stolen honor, and it is seriously frowned upon by people who have actually earned it. It is a form of fraud. However, anyone who has served in the military and been honorably discharged is entitled to be given a flag when he or she is buried. It will be folded and presented to your mother. As to the gifts he is receiving from the veterans groups, suggest that because your father is now so close to the end, they be given to other vets who can use them. Dear Abby, I've been dating a very sweet girl for the last 4 months, and I'm starting to have serious feelings for her. My children really like her, but she sat me down the other night and told me she's transgender. I'm crushed, and I don't know what to do. This blows my mind. Please give me any guidance. I care a lot about this person, and I just want to cry. Crushed in the South. Dear Crushed, you say you are starting to have serious feelings for this girl who is not only sweet, but also honest. If you are worried what others might think if they find out she wasn't assigned female at birth, then she's not the girl for you. Jacqueline Bigger Stars by Madeline Aslan. Note, Bigger Stars is based on the degree of your sun at birth. The sign name is simply a label that astrologers put on a set of degrees for convenience. For best results, readers should refer to the dates following each sign. A baby born today has a sun in Leo and a moon in Taurus until 9:46 a.m., when the moon enters Gemini. Happy birthday for Wednesday, August 12, 2020. Knowledgeable, faithful, and serious, you become an expert in your field. This year, you lighten up and learn to have more fun. Finances are very good the second half of the year. If single, you're oddly traditional and will find the one you want to marry soon. If attached, your loving relationship can sometimes be at risk of being worn out by your frenetic pace. Love wins. Capricorn advises you well. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. Aries, March 21 through April 19, 4 stars. Today promises a variety of activities and the presentation of interesting ideas. You will speak and move quickly. It is an excellent time to catch up on correspondence, make travel plans, or try some serious writing. Tonight, have that heart-to-heart with a sibling or neighbor. Taurus, April 20 through May 20, 2 stars. An inspiration or creative idea can generate extra income. Be careful not to be overly generous with associates in need. Today's aspects indicate that people nearby could drain your resources. Offer advice and encouragement, but protect your own interests. Tonight, talk to an in-law. Gemini, May 21 through June 20, 5 stars. You thrive on variety and excitement, but dread boredom. Today you will enchant others with your charm and pleasing demeanor, and no one will be bored. Express creative ideas as well as love. Tonight, Gemini night. Do exactly as thou please. Cancer, June 21 through July 22. 2 stars. Today finds regret and a sense of isolating prevailing. Release old disappointments, chalking them up to experience. Friends call to cheer you up and succeed in doing so. Try positive affirmations and visualization to help you progress more. Tonight, don't go back. Leo, July 23 through August 22. 5 stars. After weeks of soul searching, you come to realizations concerning your wishes and goals. Friends are concerned and want to help. Attachments can deepen into true love. Offer a gift of seasonal fruits to one dearest to your heart. Tonight, you're taking a risk. Virgo, August 23 through September 22. 4 stars. You will yearn for greater success and recognition due to your efforts. Extensive study and career-related travel or brainstorming sessions with respected associates all can be significant factors in helping you move forward. Tonight, call in a favor. It's long overdue. Libra, September 23 through October 22. 5 stars. Today's aspects promise a long-sought-after opportunity for travel and invitations to social events. There's a moment when you wonder if you've made the right decision. It is so way out there and bold. Tonight, you realize what you have. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21. 2 stars. Hesitate if an acquaintance suggests a risky investment scheme or business proposal. If something doesn't feel right to you, back off. Awareness of other dimensions and the presence of kindly spirit visitors also can be heightened. Tonight, early to bed. You're exhausted. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21. 4 stars. Others will communicate needs and make suggestions. Listen carefully. You will hear what you need to know concerning an important relationship. New ideas and eclectic interests impress a partner. Permit others to grow. Tonight, intimate date night with a loved one. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19, 5 stars. Today's aspects are about your health. The Capricorn cell salt is calcium phosphate. It has proven effective in strengthening bones, improving dental health, and treating rheumatism and arthritis. Tonight, find it in peanuts, almonds, pistachios, wintergreen, and comfrey. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18, 5 stars. Today gives you renewed energy and enthusiasm. You will feel like the Incredible Hulk. You will enjoy sports, creative projects, and hobbies. Love and admiration come your way. A relationship becomes more significant and supportive. Tonight, take a long, soothing bath. Pisces, February 19 through March 20. 2 stars. Your household feels unsettled as the day begins. A move or shift is hinted at. Seek ways to release stress. Explore new avenues of your creative expression. Take routine precautions regarding health and fitness. Tonight, you hear something you have not heard yet. Born today, filmmaker Cecil B. DeMille, 1881, tennis player Pete Sampras, 1971, actor Casey Affleck, 1975.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.